You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hello, and welcome to Axe to Grind. I'm Bob. That deafening silence is the sign that I am by myself right now. Tom is on a plane flying from Los Angeles to New York. Patrick is on a plane flying from Los Angeles to Perth, Australia. And to pull the curtain back all the way, Tom and I attempted to record a little mini, hey, the audio is going to be bad. He was at LAX. I was in my car driving back from playing basketball with my son. The audio is going to be bad, but in that bad, like, hey, like maybe we can make it work. It was not that. And I just listened to it. Wouldn't work. Don't want to put that on you. There's different points where my voice goes full, bleep, bleep, bleep. Other points where Tom just drops out totally. Why did we want to do this? Wanted to get out something to talk about Axe to Grind at Sound and Fury. Wanted to talk about Sound and Fury as a whole. It was a really cool weekend. There were a lot of people there. It was sort of an experience unto itself. And all the fun stuff just from being out on a trip. So unfortunately, in lieu of that, even in lieu of the LAX recording that had a certain magic to little parts of it, including a baby crying, the inimitable sounds of airlines and delayed flights in the background, et cetera, you get a little soliloquy from me. Then we're going to be joined by Eric Wilson. Eric and I went over a few highlights, but you know, I really wanted to save it. We talk about this privately. We always like to do this podcast where it's the three of us. Occasionally, there'll be episodes where Pat's gone, Tom's gone, where whatever, where I'm gone. We did want to also get something out. We love that we come out every Tuesday. It's one of the things people always say, like, hey, every Tuesday. That keeps my heart beating. So, California is amazing. If you've never had a chance to go, please go. I was able to swim in the ocean, saw a ton of old friends, made some new friends, had a time to go visit the desert. Shout out to Borrego Springs. Had an excellent, excellent meal while I was there. Perhaps the best meal I've ever had in a town with a sub 5,000 population. I didn't see any cool critters in the desert, but it was just an amazing place to be. And also got to see perhaps one of the craziest days of hardcore that I've seen in my life. But what makes it crazy isn't, you know, stage dives or moshing and singing along. It's just like the overall energy of how grateful people were to be there, how excited people were to be there, the energy and emotion of the people who were there and just being fully like locked in and engaged to that moment. And, you know, I'm not going to get too romantic. I'm not going to get too emotional here. It's a podcast. We don't come here for emotions, right? But what I want to say is that it does remind you, you have these moments in time that remind you what this is, why you got into it, and why it can still feel very, very special. So thank you to our sponsors, Deathwish, Run for Cover, Closed Casket, To Live a Lie. Thank you to Tom and Patrick for being fantastic co-hosts. Thank you to all our friends. Thank you to everybody who supports us. Thank you to Sound and Fury. Here's a quick conversation with Eric Wilson. Additionally, I am thinking that we're going to get in and record our normal episode a little later this week and have it out to you before the end of the week so we can really like get in and talk shop. Everybody, enjoy. Okay. Part two if you have made it through the first 15 minutes of this, what we're referring to as the jank to grind, introducing our special guest. But he's always, I didn't say new guest or just guest, special guest, because he's always special. Eric Wilson, how are you, buddy?
What's up? I'm good. How are you? You're back in the land of dreams.
Back in the land of pizza, and it is raining and 75. So do you know what that means? It's both wet and uncomfortable outside, which is okay. Yeah. It's okay. But I did get to spend, let's see, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, 4 full days in the land of dreams, aka Southern California, aka Los Angeles.
Oh yeah.
Thank you for being such a good friend, but also a great hanger bout guest coming over to our weird Airbnb. It was fantastic.
Loved it, dude. Thank you for everything, having me involved. Yeah. I had a fucking absolute banger of a time. It was exhausting but fun as shit.
Okay, so Tom and I talked again, as people heard, he was at LAX. I was driving around basically feeding pizza to my son. So if you hear any chewing, that's because I forgot I was recording, and I apologize. I know how ASMR people get on that stuff. That said, we're here to talk a little bit of hardcore. We did a lot of hardcoring over the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Including you. The podcast show was like half a hardcore thing. It was really cool. Thank you to everybody who was there. Eric did a great job hosting, actually.
Thank you.
But then when we came back to the Airbnb, I mean, look, Sound and Fury, I think, was like 20 hours-ish, maybe, from start to finish, each, if you combine the 2 days.
Yeah.
We might have watched that much time of hardcore videos at the house because Patrick right. had control of the YouTube.
Yeah, yeah. And we ruined some poor guy's algorithm who was still logged into the Airbnb YouTube.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Please don't tell our hosts. But yeah, that guy's going to have a different kind of experience next time he logs into YouTube.
He's going to be like, what is Koyo? What?
Huh? Okay, so what was your surprise set of the weekend?
I think as a live act, Scowl has really stepped up their game. They have like... They sounded great. They played very tight. The crowd went off. They've been playing a lot. They've been touring and stuff. So, you know, improvement in that sense is a natural result.
Let's pull back the curtain. We YouTubed this game. We had a conversation prior, and I was like, I think this was also, I believe I saw Scowl once before. This was my second time seeing them. But I said, I've been seeing more live videos of Scowl, and I think they're really good.
Yeah.
And we're like, I don't know. And so we literally went back, watched old videos with mixed results. Some were all right. Some were fine. But then I was like, no, there's one. April of this year or something like that.
Sure.
And we watched, and that was the... Actually seeing it live, like anything, watching hardcore videos really sucks actually to seeing it live, but they're awesome, and it's kind of amazing to see a band get better over time. And we now literally have, it'd be like watching a kid in first grade take jump shots to then third grade and then fifth grade, and now they're like on the varsity team. Scowl's D1 right now. They're prospecting for the majors because they're really, really an impressive live act at this point. So
I wonder if you guys have ever talked about it, and this perhaps is a deeper conversation for another episode, but with the advent of the internet and just I would be willing to bet Scowl from the day they started as a band till now, I would be willing to bet there's video evidence, there's video archive of most of their shows. Whereas, 80s, 90s, even thousands, even early 10s, media not as ubiquitous,
Yeah, that's an interesting thought because, people very close to this podcast, I've seen some older video of their stuff going back, 15 years. And it is, you're not wrong. you start a band in the 90s, you can be anonymous. Like, yeah. There's bands I like from the 90s who I never got to see and who I've never sought out videos of. That's actually a fantastic question. So I don't even know if they were good live or not, or like right. what that visual was. Whereas now you're totally right. You can actually see their evolution and you can see what it is. And it's like, oh crap. Like, you can tell they must've gotten a new drummer in August of blank year. Because yeah. they all of a sudden got way better. Yeah. That's a fun, is that like some sort of like internet archiving project, is like, band through the years, and it kind of creates a search engine and filters it. Like, I mean, clearly we can just do this on YouTube by like sorting stuff, but actually being able to sort it by date and watch an evolution.
Yeah.
And see what the highs are. I mean, the thing Patrick will bring up would be like, oh, but what about when that band hits the skids? Ooh, you know, oh, here's the tipping point. Things go down right here.
We should revisit. We should keep on Sound and Fury and revisit this another time. But I'm like super fascinated with this concept, because, you know, it sounds obvious to guys like you and I, but maybe to younger kids, it's like, you know, prior to 2012, 11, like if you wanted to film a show, you had to bring a camera with you, and right. like not everyone no. had a camera in their fucking pockets, you know. So like. Yeah, there's a lot of like, and you know, bands that matter to people, like I'm sure you can find Nirvana 1988 in the fucking in the sure. local record store in Aberdeen or whatever, because yeah. you know, that's a band that like people will dig that out. But there's, you know, there were so many, you know, better than anybody, Bob, yeah. just the amount of bands that have come and gone through the scene, and bands that people love and talk about still today, that like, yeah, there could be like zero video evidence of, you know what I mean?
Well, and it's the thing, I'm gonna shout out our a buddy Liam, who does the Cinepunk stuff, who I think I had gotten into a conversation with him about John Candy and where he fits generationally with comedians, and I think we brought this up over the weekend, but he hit me with a really fantastic question. Was like, wait, do you know about the 1977 Toronto Godspell like Whoa. production? But it was, you know, this theater production in Toronto of Godspell, something I've never seen, but I know the name instantly, right? Gildna Radner, Martin Short, Bill Murray, I think a few others, but basically all the Canadians who had become like leads yeah. in the early 80s were in this theatrical production. And I was like, oh my God. And it was just kind of like this, you know, kismet, weird circumstance. And I'm like, oh my God, like, is there video of it? And he's like, no, nobody's got any video of this thing.
Yeah.
Because it was 1977. And right. so we're talking about how hard it is. Like in 1977, I don't even think they had like the on the shoulder style, you know, camcorders.
No, you probably needed a film camera and right, and some audio equipment.
So maybe the best you could get is if the local news decided to cover this, but why would they? Because these guys are kind of, weren't yet at yeah. that point, you know? Yeah. So yeah, that's an exact phenomenon where I'm like, there's tons of these bands where, you know, the ones that matter, like you said, there's Nirvana, you got to seek it out. But the ones that didn't reach certain heights weren't there. I also think the archiving of hardcore has gotten a lot more intense over the past, yeah, the past decade. You know, I think that's both on the video side, certainly on the video side. The video side yeah. is impressive, immaculate. Like, you literally can't take anything away from all the folks who are doing video stuff, because obviously there's Sonny with his whole Hey 5-6 thing, which is massive, and just yep. like that is the monolith. But there's other people doing littler things, littler versions, both in the current tense, but also archiving older footage and kind of preserving it. But also flyers and audio recordings and live audio. So yeah, it's pretty wild. And the idea of being able to kind of, like, for lack of a better term, curve and like chart, like, oh, well, they were either, you know, whether it's reaction or, competency,
sure,
it would be pretty fun.
Crowd size, I mean, you can really like there's a number of metrics you can run it by, and there's also just the whole notion of being able to do that, the pros and cons of it, because yo, it sometimes it takes a band It can take years to find your fucking groove. You know what I mean? It can, there's growing pains, you know, it can take your up to your third album to find a the lane that you're in, you know? So it's like being able to document that from the beginning, is it kind of like, will it, you know, because everyone, maybe the scene as a whole, or whether that's like hardcore is, you know, in the macro sense of people being able to watch, like people might jump ship before you even get a chance. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's a lot to go on there. We should do that another time, but Sound and Fury. Yeah. Let's
Sound
keep going.
Fury, Sound and Fury.
Yeah. Let me ask you, what was your big surprise? Oh, surprise?
Well, you stole my answer with Scowl. I was so impressed with them. Maybe my big surprise was how many folks were genuinely jazzed for their cover, their intro cover of Waiting Room. And so in the moment, if you haven't seen, they open with Waiting Room, and I think they did it through the first chorus and then go into their set. Cool move, not cool move. What's your opinion?
I think it's a cool move. You know, it's funny that the immediate thing that came to mind when I first heard, you know, you hear the intro bass line or whatever.
Boom, 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 boom.
Sure. And the first thing that came to mind was, you know, classic track, obviously.
Classic track.
A surprise track to hear from a band like Scowl, but a good surprise. But I also think about, like, Waiting Room has probably been covered so much at this point, and Fugazi is a band that has so many good
other
songs,
tracks,
you know?
Yeah, yo, here's you're not wrong, except I can't think of the last time I saw a band do Waiting Room in person. But
I mean, if you're looking for that, you're starting the set, you want to get that pop, you start with something recognizable, that's a great
song
to go with.
You got it. You got to, I like that we're able to squeeze this much juice out of just like 15 seconds of Scowl talk.
yeah.
You want to, there's with covers, I think there's one of two ways. One, you want the big pop.
Sure.
If you want the big pop, you want to have fun. You just do something everybody knows.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I have a funny story, actually. This is years ago.
Please.
This is relevant to what we're talking about. Years ago, it was probably one of Backtrack's like first shows. So let's say 2008 or something like that. I'm a young man. I'm probably 17 or 18 at a show in Northport, Long Island. A lot of hardcore bands, real kind of like Long Island hardcore kind of tough guy energy. And I can't remember who's playing. It wasn't Backtrack. I wish for the life of me, I can't remember the band, but there you go. All right. We've got one more song. It's a cover. So everybody in the crowd is already kind of like, ooh, what's it going to be? And they do Knowledge by Op Ivy. And the whole crowd goes fucking off. It was so awesome.
Hell yeah. Yeah. So one route, you're standing at the fork in the road of the right ways to do covers. There's not a wrong way path on this split. So one is you go for the big song that everybody knows. It's going to pop and everybody's going to be dancing, singing along, diving off stuff. Hell yeah. I'm never mad at that.
Yeah.
Don't try to be too smart if you're going down that road. Just go for maximum. And if you can somehow tie in the intangible to help the vibe, yo, they could have covered a Minor Threat song and would have gone off just as big, if not bigger. They could have covered any number of bands that would have gone off just as big, if not bigger. But there was something about covering Waiting Room in the middle of the day outside hardcore festival.
Yeah.
It felt cool. It felt good. It was like, oh, this is right. So shout out. Because I want to say, Fugazi played tons of outdoor shows, which is a weird thing, but they just did it.
That's true.
It just felt cool. So
it did.
Shout out to that. The other split on that, doing the covers the right way, is so path one, you're going for pop. Path two is you're trying to expose someone to something you truly love. That is the path for the you know, not deep cut Fugazi song, but literally any other Fugazi song, 1/5 of the people know it, if that, maybe 1/10, you know?
Yeah.
So you go down that road, and if you do that road, you better play it really well. You better be able to kill that song. Two, I actually like it when bands do something like that and go record it and make it part of their whole thing, you know?
Yeah.
A great example, the best example that I always cite is Crucified. By Iron Cross. Yo, that's an Iron Cross song, but it's an agnostic front song exactly. too, you know? Yeah. So I always think that's the two right ways to do covers. If anybody's got a third, come at me. So no, Scal was awesome. Let me think of others. This is weird because it's a surprise, not a surprise. The Angel Dust set was awesome. I just went through this with Tom. Their set was just so energetic. You forget how many banging songs they have.
Oh yeah.
And how many songs they have that everyone knows. It's awesome. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Big energy. Also, shout out to Speed. My God, man. Like, what a fucking, just a heater of a set and just great fucking fantastic energy from those dudes. Really, what a good time.
After that set, they might be the biggest hardcore band from Australia ever, full stop.
Like, it's fucking deserved
it. Oh, my God. It was awesome. I think they got a few shows lined up, too. So if for some reason you didn't get to see them at Sound and Fury, you should make sure. I think West Coast dates. I don't know where it is, but people should make sure to see that band while they're over here. What was, you know, every show has its goods and its bads and its in-betweens. What was the biggest obstacle for you with Sound and Fury? What was the biggest opportunity? We'll use corporate code for something that could be better. You say it's not a problem; it's an opportunity.
I'm maybe a little bit confused by the question. Like, what exactly was
Sound and Fury perfect, or was there something that could have been better?
Oh, sure, okay. Let me think. I mean, you know, things that people might criticize it for. I honestly think were the strengths of it, and I'm sure you guys have talked about it at length at this point, but just like all current bands, all young guy bands, you know, I mean, like I come from New York. I'm used to, like, you know,
some old man hanging around,
some old dude energy, which is fine. I mean, I'm into that. I mean, you know, the same day in New York you had Breakdown Killing Time. If I was in New York,
that's right. Yeah.
If I was in New York, I would have absolutely been there. I'm not mad at that shit. But there is something very special and cool about just the you know, like each day, you know, first day headliner Drain, second day headliner Gulch, final show. You know what I mean? Like it's these are not the legacy acts that are headlining this fest, and I think that's a great energy. You know what I mean? It's not to say that.
I mean, you're not wrong. There might be someone who finds fault in that.
Sure. I think definitely there is. You have guys like Terror who are certainly, you know, they've been around a minute.
Been around,
like,
forever, sure.
Yeah, but they don't, they definitely fit in. You know what I mean?
It wasn't like Terror was, it's maybe the biggest compliment I can make. Terror has been around 20 years. Terror is a part of the hardcore 22 tapestry in the way that every other current band was on that festival.
Definitely.
That matters. And like, whether you love Terror from 2001 on, 2002 on, whether they never mattered to you in your path at all. It is impressive that they put out new records that matter to people who are younger than their band.
No question.
That's
sick.
You're not wrong, by the way, off topic. And I say this as someone who legitimately loves Killing Time. I love Killing Time.
Love them.
I love Killing Time. We both can underline that word, capital L.
Yeah.
There's a photo of Anthony Comunale. I think a Danielle Dombrowski photo. Please follow her. Great, great photographer. Where he straight up has a Wario mustache going on. And I was like, yo, I don't know if that makes me like them more right now.
Yeah.
Less, or if I'm just scared that, like, he's going to beat me in Smash Bros. But major shout outs to Killing Time. Yes, I'm going to go on a diatribe when we get Patrick and Tom on the line to do the whole damn thing.
Yeah.
But there's something interesting about doing a show there that's all current bands, you know. It's really cool. The line was wild, but from what I understand, I tried to compare this to Tom. We after the show on Saturday night, oh, you know this because we came and hung out with you. We got you a milkshake.
Yeah,
we went to In-N-Out, and it was as an In-N-Out is on a Saturday night. There is a very long line for the drive-thru, like dauntingly long. But he's like, oh man, can we go somewhere else? I'm like, no. It's going to move really fast. I was like, yeah, well, like it's long, but these things move quick. He's like, are you sure? And sure enough, it did. That is what I heard about the line, which was very long.
Yeah. So
it was long, but it moved fast. People got in. That's cool. You were there yesterday. I heard it was sunnier, a little hotter than Saturday. Is that right?
Very hot. The weather was brutal. It's unfortunate. Since moving out here, I'm Los Angeles's biggest advocate. I love it. And part of the first thing I usually say is the weather. And I'm always like, it's just fucking fantastic. And I always talk about how it's never humid. Well, it was possibly the most humid I've ever felt in Los Angeles it was fucking hot, man. It was hot. But you know what? The breeze came through. There were some clouds that hid the sun. It wasn't like totally oppressive. You could find some shade. Early in the day was rough, but as the day went on, it got easier.
The hard part is you just don't have shade sales that are big enough for 4,000 plus people.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. That's true.
Because that's, you're not wrong. So we're going through the things that were imperfect. This is, you know, like I want people to know this is a fair and unbiased podcast, right? Like, clearly I have a lot of love for Sound and Fury. Clearly got a lot of love for Los Angeles. That is a strong sun.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's the middle of, you know, it's July, August. It's that time of year.
It's hot, but Saturday, there was overcast through the early morning. Sun started popping through. When the sun came out, we could really feel it. Late afternoon, you know, maybe we give a little credit. Drug Church brought some wind. The wind beneath the wings, you know.
Was that Patrick's hot air or? No. I mean, I don't want to sound.
Breeze starts coming through, and it was like, how pleasant.
So pleasant. Drug Church, fucking amazing. Mm. Like, I know I might be biased. I do a podcast with Patrick. Sure. We're good friends. Mm-hmm. Friends with all those guys, but man, fucking Christ, they were great.
Yeah, a neat band. They're fine. No, I thought it was great. I was impressed with their set. I honestly, so it's like funny because we're going to do the deep dive. So I don't want to like dole out all my stuff now and have nothing left in the holster when I talk with PK and Tom. But it was amazing. It was amazing to see that many people there having a great time at a hardcore show. And I think you're the one who was telling me this. You were. So Friday night in LA, they did the there was the Super Heaven, Anxious, Soul Blind, the Barry show. There was the Candy, Akulu, Ingrown. Who am I missing?
Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Field of Flames opens.
Field of Flames, and there,
there was one more. The first band is escaping me at the moment. Yes.
All right, it's okay. There was that show. There was the first, I believe, the first night of the Lie Detector Fest.
Yes.
Which I want to get some more intel on that. I heard it was awesome. A lot of great reports on that. And on top of all those hardcore or hardcore adjacent shows, which I mean, just so I can give the feel, I believe between those three shows, which were all sold out or very close, we're talking about around 2,000 people, maybe a little more than that. What was the other show happening that your roommate and my new friend Evan said he was considering going to.
Shout out to Evan. There was also, which I didn't even fucking know about until I guess Saturday, but Hatebreed fucking sold out the Palladium with Anthrax.
Right. Like, yeah. What the hell?
Didn't even know about it. I think what you're getting at is like, consider the crowd for Lie Detector, the crowd for Sound and Fury, the crowd for all the after shows and pre shows and throw Hatebreed in the mix. The interest level, the scene, whatever you want to call it. It's the highest I've seen it in my time in music.
Right. And it's very fascinating. And one person could assume we would say like, oh, Turnstile. It's not that.
No.
They could be a factor, but there's just something going on here where there's a lot of people interested in this music. And
I wonder, you know what I mean? There's a lot of ways, but
one, not a complaint to be found here. Okay. Yeah. For it. Because more bodies, more people, hopefully some ideas are being shared in whatever direction, and that is either helping people spark ideas, think of things in a different way, et cetera, all good things in my book. Two, had a conversation with my buddy Mike Lawson, Mick Anders, old friends today, because they were seeing these videos of Sound of Fury, and they're like, this is unbelievable. Like, this is an amazing amount of people, all in a really positive, like, that looks great kind of way. But we're like, how could things be so big right now? And I was thinking back, I was like, okay, just on a pure baseline level, you can get music for free right now. Now, yeah, it might be you have to look on YouTube, or you have a free subscription to Spotify or whatever, where you have to listen to ads or whatever bullshit, I don't know. Or you have the $10 a month. So that's $10 a month for unlimited music is a pretty good deal as a consumer. The other end, artists getting paid, that's a different conversation. But sure, as a consumer, good deal.
Yeah.
You might as well be free, honestly. When I think of, I was like, yo, getting into hardcore as a young person, one, there was a literal paywall. You literally had to buy CDs or LP or vinyl to get in. Like, you had to go and buy these things to understand it. Doesn't, and somebody, anybody of my age or older who's hearing this is like, well, yeah, that's getting into many things, but that's not the way it is now. You know what I mean? Like, if I wanted to hear all the records Rev put out, it took me years to hear the first 20 Revelation releases.
Of course, yeah.
Because I had to buy them, and I was a teenager. I had no money, you know? And maybe I could get some from friends, but yo, man, I was in hardcore. I didn't have that many friends. Two, you had to do some real seeking to find stuff. Depending on where you live, you have to really seek out shows to go to. Probably end up going to the wrong ones. Three, you have to stumble in to somebody helping you along the way. I know I had those people who, maybe it was a friend who was just like a year older who had already had that, and they had someone who had, you know, thrown them a Bad Brains tape or something. Or then as you go along, there's a couple older guys who were like, oh, you like this stuff? Well, here's the next level. You know what I mean? And now, just with the accessibility of information, it's like, oh, okay, I'm getting down the basics. Cool. Here's these classics. Oh, here's some current bands. Oh, there's a show happening. I could find out about that. It's really interesting. But let me also put a bow on it and say that stuff isn't new either. Like, this stuff, it's not like Spotify opened shop 2021.
Right.
Like, this could have happened 7 years ago and it didn't.
Yeah,
that's happening now, yeah. You know? So it's really interesting to see what is motivating some of this new flow. And I, like you alluded to, and if you have anything to add, please do. It's a pretty big influx of people.
Yeah. I mean, so, well, just going back just a sec, I do think that Turnstile probably does play a little bit of a factor. Like, I have no doubt that there's people that heard Turnstile for the first time in 2021 with the new album, and then hit the, you know, recommended artists or the playlist or whatever. I have no doubt that that's a factor, but I don't, it's certainly not the motivating thing, or the main thing. I wonder if COVID, you know, maybe plays a factor. Like, I mean, certainly I can say for myself, like pre-pandemic, you know, I was in a point in my life where I was maybe a little cynical or maybe feeling like, you know, I don't have to catch this show, you know? And once the lockdowns hit, I was like, I feel like an asshole for ever saying no, you know, forever saying like, I'll skip that one. You know,
I felt this is why we needed you. I needed you here because Tom has always and will always stand on how cool and great hardcore is. And he's not trying to say it isn't without its flaws. He always acknowledges those. He's like, yo, hardcore rules. Tom's fucking right. Patrick, you know, is will probably just be contrarian to be contrarian, but he wouldn't ever get to the point where you did, which is exactly right. I have a feeling there were a ton of people in your same spot, whether it was a very active feeling of like, shows for whatever reason. I don't know. Same thing for me in a lot of ways, but I wouldn't have got to the same spot that you did where it's like, yo, there's just the passivity of interest in going to a show or interest in hardcore. Not totally true for me because I Axe to Grind. It's super fun. I love it. I'm a dork about that, but certainly going to shows lower on my list. Coming out of COVID, I agree. I think some of the passive dismissal is out the window and people are like, hell yeah.
Yeah.
I had no idea how good I had it. And I agree. Right. Maybe that's bringing a lot of the people out who were pushing away for it for really inconsequential little shit.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's, I never consider, you know, pre-pandemic, I never considered a world that could be taken away from you. You know what I mean? So and there was this level of like, you know, how many, I was 29 or so around the beginning of COVID. Yeah. I was 29. And there, you know, it was like, you know, I remember having the thoughts of like, you know, how many times do I need to see Madball? You know what I mean?
Sure.
But it's like, and you know, I've seen Madball well over a dozen times at this point in my life. And it's like, yeah, once we were in the middle of that shit, and like there was a time where they were saying years before music would come back, you know? And I was like, years. I was like, fuck. I was like, wait a second. I thought like, yeah, there was this passivity in me. And I was like, wait, no, I'm not done. You know what I mean? Like, I don't.
That's a great thing.
I think it just created like a, you know, especially an outdoor festival, you know, there's just something about it that's like, hey, at least for me, and I bet that there's other people like me that it's like, oh, this can
go away.
This doesn't have to be a thing. And it's like, you have to kind of cultivate it a little bit, just even by a body in the crowd. You know what I mean? Like that's what keeps it alive. And like, it's very cool to see kids, that many kids, you know, that many young people vibing on it. And it's a different vibe than when I was young. That's for sure. But that makes it even cooler. Honestly, that was like, oh, these kids are on some new shit. And like, I don't like, I was like, I don't necessarily relate. This is not what I was doing. This is not what I relate, but like, that's cool. Like hardcore,
that's cooler. Actually.
Yeah. It's like, hardcore, I think in general is like, it's a young person's music. You know what I mean? Mm. Like, and it's like, you sort of hand the baton off and like, you know, when I was a younger lad, it was kind of a lot of the hardcore was like derivative of like the Boston sound, the New York hardcore sound, very moshy, kind of groovy. That was kind of, and now like to see younger bands do something different, you know, something that's maybe more pulling from a different era.
Yeah. It's and like, it's, this stuff goes in waves and cycles. However, what's always best is when it comes out with a new curve on it, you know?
Yeah. And it's just cool to see kids take the baton and sort of make it their own. And it's like, that's awesome. Like that's, that, cause it belongs to the youth, you know?
Hold on. Let me make sure my thing's orange. That's weird. My buttons are not green. They're usually green. Okay. Oh, wait, hold on. There we go. I had a weird button. Right. yeah, no, the, you tripped over a trigger wire that's going to be the gist of almost our entire next episode. I'm not going to go too far, but people should put in their heads this question, which hopefully we'll answer later this week, which is, should a hardcore fest in 2022 look, feel, act, be like a hardcore fest from 2012 or 2006 or 2001 or 1995? And if you ask yourself that question out loud, then just consider all the other factors that go into it, and how the world has changed and how people change and how I hope for people that they change. We'll get to it. Any other closing thoughts? Because I'm going to wrap us up. We're going to make this one a relatively quickie. Cool. Any other closing thoughts on Sound and Fury and hardcore at large? Because you don't get a forum to talk about hardcore all the time. You guys are busy with Worst Possible Timeline talking about the rest of the world. You leave hardcore for Axe the Grind to pontificate on.
Absolutely. Let's see. I'll try and sum up my thoughts here. Building off what we were saying, you know, Drain and Gulch, the headliners of the weekend, their sets, they were just like, it looked like Woodstock 99. Nothing was burning down. Things weren't being torn apart, but I just mean the sheer size of the pit and the crowd. It was like, holy fuck, this is for Gulch. Like, walk outside of that festival grounds and I don't know that there's a lot of people, you know what I mean? Like,
right
at the time, Limp Bizkit, you know, certainly was a, it could have, it was a household name, but yes, like seeing right. that sort of energy generated from you know, outside of hardcore, relatively a thing that probably not a lot of people know about, was insane. Shout out to God's Hate. I thought their set was fucking fantastic. Pity Sex on the reunion, that was fucking cool. Yo, shout out quick to Cola Boy, like, just for doing something different in the middle of the day, just kind of changing up the energy a little bit, I thought was extremely refreshing. You know what I mean? It just kind of like, you know, it was just a little something different. And it was groovy. It was fun. Oh, yeah. You know, they brought a great energy, I thought. And it was just a nice little break in the day to be like, all right, everybody, you know, like, we're here for hardcore, but we're also, you know, having fun in the sun, whatever. That was cool. Just a fun fucking weekend. It was great. I don't know. I think that's all I got.
I want to say thank you, everybody. Thank you for all the support. Thank you to all our friends we get to hang out with. You know who you are. Thank you to Riley, Martine, Madison, and the rest of their teams. And a major shout out. I had a very brief but cool conversation with Nate, who knows who he is, who has attended every single Sound and Fury.
Oh, cool.
And there's a few others like him. And he asks, he's like, I wonder how many people here have attended everyone. I think Rashad also, if he hasn't attended everyone, he's been very close. Travis may have attended everyone. He's very close. But hardcore rules, okay?
Hell yeah, hardcore fucking rules. Shout out to all the bands and all the people that put it together and made it, a fan like me making a guy very happy, and a ton of other people, I'm sure, too. So big thank you to everyone involved, seriously.
Good night.